Let's see. They lost to Stinky Crotch by 42.
What?
University of Stinky Crotch, USC.
Wow. I've never heard that one, Travis.
Neither.
Fuck it, baby. I'm a shooter, baby. You just dude, the
I'm
next
a,
one's
hey,
going
I'm a shooter
in.
Too, but I'm just saying, like,
next one's going in. I miss a couple, and I'm certain the next one's going in.
Drew's an asshole on the court. That's all I learned there.
Nice. Yeah.
Nothing like a dude. Nothing like a 6'3 balding man who just airballed three in a row, being like, "I got the next one."
Yep.
I got five
yep.
on it.
Yep, that's it. That's it. I was, and the next one's going in.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Hammer and Rails podcast, and we are coming at you live on the eve of the NCAA tournament here in 2018. Purdue has gotten its highest seed since the 1998 NCAA tournament. We are the 2 seed in the East. We are on the short list of teams expected to make it to San Antonio. We got not a terrible draw, but not a perfect draw, but we have a shot, and I think that that's one thing that we need to concentrate on is... This is Matt Painter's best shot since he has been coach at Purdue, and probably Purdue's best shot since 2000 when it reached the Elite Eight before losing to Wisconsin. So we're going to talk about all this and more tonight. With us on the mic up in West Lafayette, Indiana, is Casey. How are you doing, Casey?
This is such a different show from the very beginning when you're on. Like, every time, it's just, like, straight into, like, I feel like I'm in a library, there's a fire roasting in the corner, we're all, like, getting served soft martinis, and, like, everyone's holding up, like, are you eating already, Drew?
Yes.
Stop snacking on the podcast!
It's called Sorry. Professionalism and class. I exude it in every aspect of my being. I don't sweat. I ooze Old Spice. That's how classy I am.
The only sound that is acceptable to interrupt with is the sloshing of your drink cup, and that's just because I can't do this sober.
Our second guest tonight from Manhattan, Kansas, is Drew. That is the legend of Sean McCarthy. He is on with us as our 3-man. How you doing, Drew?
What up, everybody?
You literally chewed a chip longer than your intro.
Anyway, so let's get at it. The brackets are out. We have our 4 number one seeds. Went exactly as expected by most bracketologists. Virginia and Villanova have been the top 2 seeds for most of the season. Xavier, the winner in the Big East, even though they lost, I believe it was twice, to Villanova, they get the 3rd number one seed. And then we have Kansas, also picks up a number one seed. Kansas gets sent out west. They have a pretty tough region themselves, with Virginia also having a ridiculously hard region with Kentucky or Arizona waiting in the Sweet 16. Our own region, we have Villanova, the team that we've only played once here in the last couple of years, but it seems like we've had, you know, half a dozen other meetings possible with them. We just missed them at the in the Bahamas down at the Battle for Atlantis, and they could be waiting for us in the Elite Eight, but that's way down the line. We have not been to the Elite Eight in 18 years, so let's not just talk about Villanova yet. So what do you guys think about all the number one seeds and how the bracket itself broke down?
I think it's nice that there weren't surprises for once, I guess, because it's a weird line because there was definitely a clear top four that were going to get it. But also, despite Virginia and Villanova running away with the one seeds, it never really felt like any of the teams separated from the lower seeds. I'm not sure there's anyone in the country that thinks those are the most talented teams. You could probably argue about Villanova, especially since he was there, since Jay Wright had them there so recently. But you look at other, you know, some of the 2 or 3 teams and you think, I mean, there's no way not to look at Duke and be like, they are as dangerous as anyone in the country. Michigan State, same thing. So the one seeds technically get the easiest stretch, but I really think the difference between a 1 and 4 seed has never been smaller.
I agree, because you look at a team like Arizona, and they are a 4 seed with 1 seed talent in my mind.
They have the best player in the country. And it's not even close.
Right. And then they may not even make it out of round 2 because Kentucky is, well, Kentucky loaded with tons of 4-stars and 5-stars and everything else. So that might be one of the best second round games out there is a Arizona-Kentucky game. And then you still have Duke and North Carolina, who are Duke and North Carolina, and they're looming as very, very strong 2 seeds. I mean, I think North Carolina played a ridiculous number of Tier 1 games, and yeah, they have 10 overall losses, but their strength of schedule is just insane compared to everybody else.
Yeah, Drew, you're an ACC fan.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the best conference in the country?
First of all, Clemson fans are not ACC fans. We hate the ACC.
You're in the ACC.
I know things about the ACC because I hate all the teams in the ACC other than Clemson. Is ACC the best conference talent-wise? Probably it is, but a lot of that talent hasn't played super great this year. So, no, I don't think the ACC is the best team, the best in the nation this year. Since Louisville's been down, Syracuse is down. You know, a lot of the teams that the ACC brought in, because they were great basketball programs, haven't really been holding their own here recently.
I mean, you don't really need to. You can play shitty and still get into the tournament. Hi, Syracuse.
Okay, I just looked it up. North Carolina played 22 Tier 1 games.
What?
They played 22 games against Tier 1 teams. They were 14-8.
Damn.
Yeah. So a couple of those end up, you know, and then they still had quite a few Tier 2 games. Like Bucknell ends up being a Tier 2 game. They won at Stanford. That was a Tier 1.
Let's go ahead and remind the listeners about the tiers one more time.
Sure, sure. The tiers, since they changed up the RPI this year, it's not broken down in your typical how many top 50 teams did you beat, how many 51 to 100s did you beat. A tier one game is when you play anyone 1 through 30 in the RPI at home. On a neutral floor, it's 1 through 50, and on the road, it's 1 through 75. So it actually is built to value true road games a little bit more than home wins. So you have an example, one of the stranger examples out there for Purdue is one of our 6 tier one wins was at Maryland, a team that was nowhere near the tournament. They finished 74 in the RPI and we won in College Park. So that one counts as a tier one win. Whereas the win against them in Mackey Arena, same RPI, is a tier two win because RPI group 2 was 31 through 75 for home. So
yeah, it's not a perfect system, but it's definitely a lot. It's a lot better than the one we had.
Right.
And it really, really benefits conferences that have the 10 to 12 good to decent teams,
mm-hmm.
which is weird. The one year that it switches to this is the one year where Big Ten, normally who has a gluttony of teams in the middle, this year we do not. We get 4 teams into the tournament. All of them get high rankings for the most part. Our lowest seed is Ohio State at a 5, who's going to play South Dakota State. Michigan gets a 3 seed against Montana. Michigan State gets a 3 seed against Bucknell. And then Purdue holds a 2 seed. But that's it. There's only 4 Big Ten teams that make the tournament. And all, even the teams that made it, plus the ones that didn't, if it were a normal Big Ten year, they would all have a huge boost in their NCAA resume because there would be 5 or 6 teams that you're like, oh, wow, Maryland is a tier one win. Oh, Nebraska is a tier one win. Oh, Indiana should be a tier one win. But since it was so down on the Big Ten, our Big Ten teams did not get the boost like UNC with the 30-some tier one games or whatever.
Right, because you look at Nebraska with 13-5 in the Big Ten. 13-5, they probably have the best record for a Big Ten within the conference to not make the tournament ever. I've never even heard of a 13-5 Big Ten team, but they were 1-6 against tier one teams. Their one win was against Michigan at home, and they came so close in so many other games. They had a 5-point loss at Ohio State. They had the 1-point loss at home to Kansas, which would have been a huge victory for them. They lost at Michigan State, and you know, it just was not there for him. They didn't have the strength of schedule that they needed. And I'm looking at their exempt tournament. One of the things that hurt them is they lost their first game against Central Florida in the Advocare Invitational, which puts them in a second round game against Marist, who went 6-25 and finished 324th in the RPI. By comparison, Purdue's second game in our exempt tournament was against Western Kentucky.
Yeah, it's not ideal. Especially when you are a conference that, for the most part, does not get the top-tier talents. And so we survive on having a bunch of teams that aren't bad. That's been almost the MO of every fourth to seventh team that gets in the tournament. It's because you always have a chance to prove yourself every week. And, I mean, this year, most of the top teams all got by playing the best teams once. And then just feasting on a crappy Big Ten slate.
Yeah, because if you look at the four teams that got in, they had a combined 13 conference losses. You know, two of Purdue's were to Ohio State and Michigan State. Both of Michigan State's losses were to Ohio State and Michigan. Ohio State lost to a decent Penn State team twice, and they lost to Michigan. So really, your worst conference losses out there were probably Purdue at Wisconsin. And then Michigan, two of their losses were to Purdue. Their worst loss would likely be at Northwestern was their worst loss in the conference, because all the others combined, I mean, they lost at Ohio State, they lost to Purdue twice, and then they lost at Nebraska, which wasn't a horrid loss. I mean, Nebraska was 56th in the RPI, but you're right in that point, and just everybody beat up on everybody else. And I think the Big Ten also did not benefit from Maryland going through so many injuries that it cost them a bid, really. And then Northwestern and Minnesota, two teams that were in the top 20 to start the year, just fell off a cliff.
They fell on their asses. Like, they just did. There's probably some fool's gold on both teams, but they both should have been better. Drew, do you think any of the Big Ten teams that didn't make it should have made it?
No. I think Penn State's probably that like next team.
That's where I lean. I feel like talent-wise they definitely are.
Yeah, like I think if you were to play a tournament between those teams, I'd probably favor Penn State to win it, I guess.
I think Penn State is in if they beat Nebraska in the last game of the regular season.
Or they beat us in the tournament.
Yeah, I think they would have gotten in. They had some bad losses, though. They had they also lost at Northwestern. They had just a nasty home loss to Rider by a point. But Rider ended up 69th in the RPI
nice.
Before losing in their conference tournament. So... I honestly think that Nebraska probably had a better case, but you know, that's the gaudy record. And I think Maryland probably gets in if they hadn't had so many injuries. I know that they had a couple of games that they ended up just blowing a big lead here and there. One of them was at home against Michigan State. I think they were up like 20 in the first half and they blew it. So, and
they could have beat us at home.
Yeah.
It's the only thing I miss about a Big Ten team. Like, I wanted to see Tony Carr in March.
Yeah. He would be an excellent player. And was he a senior this year or no?
No, he's only a sophomore.
Okay.
Well, like, we get a lot more of him. I mean, he'll definitely get some NBA going to be good because he's huge.
Yeah,
6'5 Penn State's guard going to be with good. Range.
So, you know, I don't think that if there was one team that I think has a beef out of the Big Ten, it's Nebraska. I think they could have gotten a little bit more consideration, especially when they were a 5 seed in the NIT, which is, we were talking in our group chat, is like, that's telling you that there were 16 teams ahead of them.
I don't think that's right, because the NIT is really focused on bringing mid-majors into their tournament. They want to give shine to other programs, up-and-coming programs. It's not the same committee picking teams. I don't think they care so much for resume as they do narrative. So I don't put a ton of stock into what their seeding was.
Yeah,
but still, I don't think they were close. I don't think it, like, Nebraska just got squeezed out of the end. I'm not sure they were much in the conversation.
I think a couple teams that were closer. I think Louisville was definitely closer. And Louisville's probably in if they didn't just absolutely collapse in that game against Virginia, which I still don't know how they lost that.
You don't know how much of that is off the court issues. I'm assuming that any of those teams on the bubble that were really instigated in that, I'm guessing they did not get the benefit of the doubt.
Let's see. That would be Louisville and I think Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
And... Yeah, because Oklahoma State also did not get in, even though, and they were one of the four teams wrapped up in that, did not get in.
USC.
Yeah, and USC.
So I think that might have had as much to play as anything else.
True. Yeah. But speaking of the tournament, let's go to a little bit deeper of a dive here. And we're going to talk about the three opponents that we can see here in the first weekend. Obviously, we're paired against Cal State Fullerton in one of the noon games, the noontime slot games on Friday. And as a 2 seed over a 15 seed, yes, this is a game Purdue absolutely should win. It would be a shocking upset if we were to lose to the Titans. Cal State Fullerton, I believe this is their third ever NCAA tournament berth for basketball, and they are mostly known as a baseball pro. They were often in the College World Series for baseball. They have won it multiple times, and it's mostly a commuter school, I think. I was actually strangely on their campus this summer when we were out in California. We were driving around. We ended up going through their campus, and it was, you know, kind of just like, oh, hey, there's a college here.
Yeah.
But they were the 4th seed in the Big West, so they weren't even favored to win their conference tournament. Their other two NCAA tournament appearances were in 2008. They lost in the first round to Wisconsin by 15. And in 1978, they reached the Elite Eight, losing to Arkansas by 3 points of going to the Final Four. And that's it for their tournament appearances.
Anytime I go to, when I look at a small school going up against a big school, or against Purdue specifically, I look for, there's two things. One is obvious because you want to look at height. Small schools just don't have the depth of big men. And if you don't, you can't keep up with Isaac Haas and Matt Harms and Vincent Edwards. Cal State Fullerton does not have that. They have a 6'9 guy, Akrim Robertson, who's a senior. He plays 38% of their minutes. Their real big man is Jackson Rowe. He's a sophomore. He plays 75% of their minutes, but he's only 6'7. 6'7, 210 pounds. So really slight of flame. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Their other big guy is 6'7, 200 pounds, Dominique Heinzel. So first of all, that's just obviously not a good matchup going against Isaac Haas. At 6'7", 210, Matt Harms is going to bully you in the post, so let alone what Haas is going to do. And the other thing, you have to look at a team, and this, I mean, Arkansas Little Rock, as much as what they did, they beat us by making really long jumpers. So I look for a team that could shoot the ball well from three, and that is not this team. They have a couple guys that are shooting a decent percentage. Kyle Allman, 6'3", junior guard. He's shooting 43% from three, but that's just on 92 attempts. Their leading attempt shooter is Khalil Ahmad. He's 6'4". He's a junior. He's taken 164 threes, but he's only made 31% of them. Then they've got a couple. Jackson Rose, 22 of 54 from deep. Jamal Smith, 6'3", guard. He's taken 32 threes and made 40% of them.
Any of their big guys shoot?
I mean, Jackson Rowe is their de facto center.
Mm-hmm.
He's a center in six of their ten most used lineups. Power forward when he's not, and he's shooting 40%, but he's only taking 54 a game. So,
like, yes, is he gonna give Haas, is he going to be able to spread the floor and make Haas play defense then?
I don't think so, because you don't have the threats around him. Honestly, they don't have the guard play, because it's not simple enough to just have a big man that can shoot unless they're really, really good. And they just don't have the shooting around. So, like, you can rotate over. You can help on Haas. You can switch out and just keep him in the paint. Honestly, I mean, this is never going to happen. I wish people would stop mentioning it. But this is a team that Purdue, like, if they were ever to go zone, this would be the kind of team. But they're not going zone.
And it seems like it's a team, too, that, you know, as we've seen so many others do to us, they try to get that mismatch, and they try to get Haas to get that quickness and get by him. And, you know, obviously, I think one of the benefits of the 2 weeks off here is, you know, we can work on that high screen and roll that has just been picking us apart and for so many games now. And, you know, we've got to come up with an answer.
We haven't been good at stopping that for, like,
that is the one. It is one concern, because Kyle Allman and Ahmad, the two lead guards, and even their third guard, Austin Awasika, they all shoot. Allman and Ahmad are both 50% inside the arc. That's pretty good for a guard. Awasika's 45% from inside the arc. So they are quick. They get to the free throw line a lot. So they're going to run a lot of pick and roll. This, honestly, as much as... I never know the right answer, because Harms makes so much more sense, except he's not very good in the pick and roll defense either.
No, he gets lost. Like
he gets, yeah.
I feel like Haas is two steps behind, but sometimes Harms isn't even like in the remote area where he should be.
No, he gets out of position so quickly. Like he's way too eager to stop a dribbler before he's even close to threatening the defense.
And he's super thirsty for the block shot. Anybody that just like bobs their head up, and he's off the floor.
Honestly, my biggest thing with Haas is like, get your bloody hands up. You're 7'2". You can block. He would block twice as many shots just by sticking his hands up.
He was better at the beginning of the year. He's gotten worse on defense as the years went on. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's fatigue or foul trouble or what.
Like, he straight up plays defense with his hands like by his side.
Yeah,
like,
it's...
Like, he goes out, and I'm like, they're passing around him because he doesn't, have his arms out.
Yeah, and he does not understand passing lanes well. And my biggest thing is he just stands in the wrong position. He's that big, he should be able to cut off most easy passes, and he doesn't. This would be a game to put Vincent Edwards at the five.
Yeah.
If we put Vincent at the five, game. We can just run him.
The unfortunate thing with Haas is, like, I wish we could hockey line change with him because he is such an asset on offense and he's just a raging liability on defense, especially against athletic teams.
Yeah, it's always a challenge, but I think I definitely think with talent disparity like this, Haas is a better advantage.
Yeah.
Especially with guards that can't shoot, we will just go under. Expect us to go under with the guards on all pick and rolls and not switch with Haas. The guards are just going to go under, force them to shoot jumpers, and then rebound.
And then watch one of them go like 11 for 15 from three.
Right.
Because you know that's going to happen, and it's probably going to be the third guy that's only taken like 12 threes this year.
Yeah, it'll be Jamal Smith. He's taken 32 threes all year.
Yeah, no, he's going to hit at least 11 against
Purdue. He's made 13. Like, that'll definitely be 17 by the end of the game.
I'm predicting at least one is like going to come right at half court, too.
You mean like the 7-footer for Little Rock that had one bounce off the rim twice and somehow drop in?
Yeah, no, I was there. I think about straight up in the air. And it hit the rim about straight up in the air again, and then, somehow rolled in.
The one nice thing, they don't play super fast. They're the 97th quickest adjusted tempo in the NCAA. But they're not good on offense. They're not good on defense. I think we're good enough. Like, I'm not worried.
Right. This is a game I think we can bring our C game and beat them.
Right. And that's often how these 2-15 matchups go. I mean, it might be close for a half, but I really think
they also turn over the ball a lot.
Right. And they're still the fourth best team in a small conference.
Travis, they turn over the ball 20.6% of the time.
Great googity moogity. Wow.
That's one out of every five times. Like, Eastern might have 7 steals.
So I'm looking at their schedule here. They finished 131 in the RPI.
Do you want to know what their best win is? Because I know it off the top of my head.
All right, go give me their best win.
It's a thing called Utah Valley.
Ah, yes. The Wolverine.
They played a geographical location.
So at 131 in the RPI, the nearest team to that we happened to play was Indiana at 125. They opened the season by losing by 42 points to Southern Cal.
They put up 42 points. They got doubled.
Yeah, they got doubled. 84-42. They also lost.
St. Mary's is a good match. St. Mary's has a big dude.
Yeah, and St. Mary's really beat him by 19. Beat him 76-57. They did host Georgia in the Wooden Legacy and lost by 7. So they were relatively close there against a major conference team. They also played at Cal and lost by 6, but Cal was 8-23, so I don't think you can take a ton from that. Their biggest win here, also in the postseason, they were able to upset UC Davis, who was the number one seed and their conference champion. They knocked him off in the semifinals of the Big OS tournament and then beat Irvine, which It's pretty much like the distance between Cal Irvine and Cal Fullerton is probably like the distance between Butler and IUPUI. So it was basically a neighborhood game for the automatic bid to the tournament. And they were able to beat them in that last night to get the automatic bid.
Cal State Fullerton beat UC Davis while shooting 1 of 13 from 3.
Oh, God.
They're not going to win if they shoot 1 of 13 from 3. I'll go for it. They're not going to win.
They got over 100 twice this year. They hit 102 against Cal State Northridge, who is one of the worst teams in Division I. And they also had 101 against Cal Poly, who is also a terrible team in Division I. But they had Davis's number, it turns out. They swept them in 3 games, which is pretty impressive because Davis was a tournament team a year ago and was 12-4 in winning the conference. So 2 of the 4 losses that they had in conference, plus their conference tournament loss, were to Cal State Fullerton. So I think that says something that they were able to just have their way with the best team within their conference. But when you
look, that speaks more to matchup. What they do well, they get to the free throw line.
Yeah.
They're the number one team in the nation for free throws attempted against free field goals attempted.
They have not played a tier one team since November 15th. So this we are by far their best team that they have played all season. Because USC and St. Mary's were the only two teams that they played in tier one, and that was the first 2 games of the year.
We are the 7th best defense at not giving up free throws attempted to field goals attempted.
Right.
That's not a good matchup.
It's not a good matchup for them because we're not going to bail them out.
So I think we're all in agreement that this should be a Purdue win. And we can take a quick look then at who we would play in the second round. Butler, we're obviously very familiar with. We were able to beat them back in December by 15 points. And Butler is one of those teams. They're good, and they can play with anybody.
We're not a good matchup for them.
Right.
Because they can't shoot.
They can shoot at times. I mean, any team that puts up 101 on Villanova.
Every team in basketball.
Yeah, but I mean, they do have the win over Villanova. They played a couple of...
When their point guard played us, their starting point guard, he hadn't attempted a three-point shot.
That's bad.
Their lead ball handler, let me pull up his... Yeah, their lead ball handler, Aaron Thompson, has taken 14 threes on the year and made 2 of them.
Wow. So what you're saying is if we play him, he's going 5 for 6. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I mean, Butler's just an
They
up
were
and down
missing
team.
Sean McDermott when we played him, and he is huge for them.
Yeah.
He's a wing that can shoot, but I still don't think they match up well.
I mean, they're up and down. They have a win over Villanova. They played Xavier Tough. I mean, they have 5 games against number one seeds this year. They went 1-4.
They're a good team. They're well coached. But if you tell me you either get to play Butler again or are you going to play Arkansas?
I want Butler.
Yeah.
Because Arkansas, hate to say it, Purdue fans, but this is the team that we've been dreading. Athletic guards. They can allegedly have a guy that can defend Haas 1-on-1. I have my doubts as to the truth of that. But Arkansas is a pretty solid team. And you know, you're going to see that. 7-10 matchups do produce quality teams. It's like playing when you get to the round of 32, you're not going to have an easy opponent, most likely.
Right.
And if, especially as a 2 seed, it's going to be a tougher opponent than your first round. So, you know, we expected that, and, you know, it's something that Purdue is going to have to get past.
Yeah, I think Arkansas's A games probably, like, if they brought their A game, it would be tough for Purdue, but they don't bring it very often. And I don't know if they could bring it against a team like Purdue. But I think Arkansas is a team that if they brought their A game and were hot, we'd have a hard time with.
They shoot a lot of threes. They shoot a lot of threes.
I don't like that.
They're
shooting 40% too as a team.
Right, 40% as a team, 12th in the nation. They've got 2 different guards that light it up. Jalen Barford, 6'3", 202. Daryl Macon, 6'3", 185. One of them's 85 for 195 from the three-point line. The other one is 84 for 196. Both of those, that's both like 43% shooting from deep. That's a lot of attempts. That's 2 guards that make a lot, just a lot of room for other people. They pull it off the dribble, but they're not big. Big guards can give us trouble.
They're also allergic to defense.
Yeah.
They are 260th nationally, giving up 75.5 a game. Now, you can give up 75 a game when you're scoring 81 a game like they are, but
I think part of their defense, I think they really force the tempo of the game with their defense and gamble a lot. I think they give up a lot of easy shots. I think they try to come in, cause a lot of turnovers at the same time. I think.
Are you kidding me?
They're a team that if you're young, you should be worried.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me, Seth Davis? Okay, so the guy that can allegedly guard Haas is Daniel Gafford. He is 6'11", 234.
Yeah, I was going to break this down.
Yeah, he is 6'11", 234, and a freshman. And
yeah,
this is the guy that can guard Haas.
55.9% of the minute.
Oh, God.
His foul called, if he played 40 minutes a game, he'd have 5.8 fouls called against him. That's not terrible. But there's not depth there. They have a 6'9 guy, Trey Thompson. He plays 44% of their minutes. And their other big guy, 6'8", Dustin Thompson, plays 36% of their minutes.
But as we've seen, it's the teams that go small with us, if they get in foul trouble, that's what causes problems. I mean, all you have to do is look at the Ohio State game for that. You know, they stumbled into a formula that got them
Ohio
back.
Ohio State didn't go small.
They had to.
No.
Yeah, they were playing like Kyle Young on Haas at one point.
Yeah.
No, those are stocky big dudes. They're strong. I don't think about strong. I don't think about going small as in like who's your center. I think of it more about like who's your four. That's what I see.
To me, it's a game against a team like Arkansas. You've got to have good Vince Edwards.
Also, everyone in the Big Ten, I guarantee you, there's probably not a single player in the Big Ten that gets more attention and more like coach specific talk throughout the year. There's not anyone more game planned against than Haas, and that's just not going to be the case in the NCAA tournament.
Right,
these teams do not know him. Getting away from Big Ten teams that are used to bullying, that are used, they know what fouls are being called, they know what's not. It's not going to be as easy to guard Haas in the NCAA tournament as it is in the Big Ten season.
Unless he gets called for a lot of offensive fouls by refs that haven't
seen
him.
He's gotten better this year.
He's avoided foul trouble for the most part this year.
Out of conference, I think he's just so hard to officiate. I think that not the getting officials that haven't seen him before can also get him in foul trouble because he's just so big, and every time he moves, somebody falls down.
Yeah. Looking at Arkansas's schedule this year, they played out in the Phil Knight Invitational out in Portland. They ended up beating Oklahoma out there. That's one of their better non-conference wins, if not the best non-conference win.
Can we stop talking about Oklahoma like they're a good team? I am so annoyed that they're in the tournament.
Oh, yeah, me too. I agree. They lost to North Carolina. They had a decent non-conference win over Bucknell. You know, I'll give credit where it's due when you do beat one of those automatic qualifiers. They had a win over Minnesota by 16 on December 9th.
Not impressive.
It looked a lot better at the time. I believe that was Minnesota's first loss of the season. No, it was their third loss of the season. So it was right as Minnesota was starting to come undone. And everything else.
They beat Tennessee at home. Overtime,
beat Tennessee
that's their best
by two.
Win.
Yeah, that's a quality win. They lost at Auburn by 11. They lost at home to LSU by 21.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Not good. A couple other decent wins here. They lost at Florida by 15. They won over Missouri by 2. Lost at Texas A&M by 14. They lost to LSU by 8 on the road. So that's 2 losses to LSU. Then they lost to Tennessee by 18 in the SEC tournament semifinals here. So, you know, pretty up and down season. 6-9 against tier one.
Do you know what LSU has?
Nothing.
I'm going to assume they have athletic guards.
No, they have two really good big men.
Okay.
Duop Reith and Aaron Epp.
I don't concern myself with LSU basketball.
Yeah, we're going to have to agree with you, Casey, because I don't know.
The point is that good big men beat them.
And you know, that's good. But I'm still going to be concerned.
Aaron Epps scored 16 points on 5 field goal attempts against Arkansas.
One other thing that does stand out about Arkansas is they're not a good rebounding team either. They are 206th in the nation.
I think that is the silver lining.
Yes.
Because I think athletic teams that rebound is the problem, not athletic teams that score.
But if they're going to hit 45% of their threes and shoot 30 of them,
Sure, but I don't think they're going to hit 45% of 33s.
Ugh, we'll see. I mean, that's really, that, like you said, if they've got their A game, and that's, I mean, that's really what the tournament comes down to is if you run into a team on their A game, like when we ran into VCU in 2011, sometimes there's just not a lot you can do. I mean, look at what Kansas did last year.
Sure, but I think the thing is, what is more likely, that Purdue's defense gives up an A game to an offense, or Purdue's offense gets an A game from someone else's defense?
Mm-hmm.
Or that they have an A game against someone else's defense?
And I do think...
I go back to the Michigan game.
Which
the
one?
The one in Mackey.
The one in Mackey, okay.
We got Michigan's A game.
But we were hitting.
Right, and their defense is really good.
Yeah, but we haven't hit like that since then. That's part of the problem.
Right, we're due. Don't you remember, Drew? You miss three, you take the fourth. You know what's right. Going in.
Exactly.
I do think that...
Irrational confidence.
I'm really hoping that the longer layoff here is extremely beneficial to us. I think the team desperately needed the time off. Just in looking at body language for them in the last few games, and especially in that Wisconsin game, they looked cooked. And I'm hoping that it sounds like they were able to just get away from basketball for 3 or 4 days, and that's a good thing. And I like having a 2 seed because that gives us the proverbial team to shake the rust off against. It's not like we're going to be thrown into a toss-up game immediately. We're expected to win big, and I think that'll help. And, well, really, that's all we can hope is that they do need it, that they did need the rest, because otherwise we're going to be in trouble.
All right. Purdue lost 6 games this year.
Right.
Okay? We lost 6 games.
3 of them that came down to the very final possession.
We lost against Michigan. According to KenPom, Michigan's defense, 5th best.
And we still beat them twice.
We lost to Michigan State, 9th best. We lost to Ohio State, 16th best. We did lose to Wisconsin, 68th best.
Decent.
Yeah, decent. And at home, it's better. We lost to Tennessee all the way at November 22nd. They have the 4th best defense. And we lost to Western Kentucky, 93rd. So that's not good.
And you could say that Western Kentucky and Wisconsin were both games that if the offense is just better.
Yeah.
You know, those
are our two worst games of the year. Absolutely. And we had open shots against Western Kentucky all game.
Yeah. I would argue that we had no business losing against Wisconsin because we should never lose a game where we hold a team under 60.
Absolutely. Arkansas's defense is 103rd in the nation.
Okay.
They give up 35.5% three-point shots, 48% from inside the arc. We don't lose to bad defenses. We just don't.
All right. Well, let's get the Sweet 16 tickets then.
Exactly. That is what I'm trying to tell you. We do not get upset by teams that can't play defense.
Everybody, Casey is telling you to go purchase Sweet 16 tickets if available.
I will refund 0.01% of your pre-sale purchase.
So head to Boston. Gotcha.
Yep, yeah, yep. Yeah. Just get the hotel rented right now. You gotta get the room early.
I've already told my aunt I'm crashing on the couch. Like, we're going. We're there. We don't lose. We think our losses are bad, but we lost to really good defensive teams.
I really hope you're right. And I'm going to be nervous because I'm a Purdue fan, and I cannot help it. Because of that.
I get it. You're very scared.
I'm always going to be scared until we actually get through. But I do agree that this is our best shot. So I guess here's what we should do is...
Let's move on to our question and answers.
Let's do some Q&As. Yes.
Q&A. All right. I'm pulling it up now. All right. First question from @DRealScottEvans. Expectation in this tourney for it to be a success. We'll start with you, Drew.
For the season to be a success, I think we need to make the Elite Eight.
Travis?
Play to your seed. I think they need to make the Elite Eight. I think they got to break through that glass ceiling, mostly because if they don't, there's going to be all kinds of questions of, if this team can't do it, when will we do it?
I completely agree, but at the same time, I think people will still bitch.
Yeah, if we lose in the Elite Eight, we'll be a game short. And
I am satisfied with the Elite Eight. That is my expectation. I think that is a non disappointing season.
I will give this as a caveat. I would only be fine with an Elite Eight loss if it came in the hands of Villanova. If we're the higher seed, then no.
That is fair.
We've got a breakthrough if we get there and we're playing anybody other than Villanova, because who's the 4 in our group? Let's see.
West Virginia is the 5. Are they the 4?
And
West
allegedly,
Virginia is a
they're the
team that
five.
Could
Wichita
that
State's
could cause
the four.
Some trouble.
Yeah, I would rather play Wichita State than
West Virginia
doesn't
plays
scare
that
me in the least. West Virginia does not scare me in the least.
I feel like West Virginia would be a tough team. Would be a team that could pull a couple upsets just because you don't see that defense very often. True. And if they get hot, they can put up
they're
a lot of
points. They're also really
on you.
Bad on offense, though.
Yeah, but yeah.
If you force them into a half-court game, they're really bad.
Yeah, but I know that we have scrimmaged against them the last 2 years, so we have a level of familiarity with them. And supposedly we handed it to them this year in the scrimmage. Now, again,
that's
whatever. But we're going to be more familiar with a West Virginia than
like
anybody
that
else there.
I like that.
That's why I'm not as afraid of playing West Virginia as many others are.
Here is a question by at Benjamin Schott. It's also a very easy question. Is it an advantage to have a possible Butler rematch due to less scouting needed for an opponent? Yes. Stop asking dumb questions. All right. Boiled Sports. Our buddies over at Boiled Sports, who we love.
Yes, they're great.
We love them. Can Carson and Haas find a balance on the offensive end if, when we get to the second weekend? That is a good question.
That's a very good question, because that's kind of what gets going is, you know, when it's humming, Haas is able to, you know, get somewhere between 12 and 18 points while everybody else is hitting from outside. It's when you've got to make teams to pick your poison. That's when we've been playing at our best. It's when we've just gone to the straight Haas fence and everyone's standing around, or if nobody else is hitting, that's when we've had trouble.
Drew,
but
I know you have a
balance.
Lot. I do have a lot to
Drew
say
has
about
a lot
this.
Of fire on this one.
I do. I do not like when the offense runs around Isaac Haas, and I feel like when Matt gets into tight games against good teams, he just sort of goes to that as like the easiest way to play, I guess. I think we saw it against Michigan State, where just sort of everything just sort of tightens up, and then we just run that one set the whole time and see if Isaac can beat, you know, could beat Michigan State on his own. And so I really feel like we have to avoid the trap, because it is easy to play through Haas.
Right.
But I don't. It's easy to do it, but I don't necessarily think it's our best. That's when we are at our best.
I think you definitely hit on it. It is easy, and at the same time, the most exciting part about Harms coming to campus is how fast and mobile our motion offense looks with him on the court. Him setting those pick and rolls, him doing the dribble handoffs. It is a whole new gear that we have not had since Juwan Johnson, and it's really exciting. But the question is, can we find that balance?
I am fine with having Haas, if it's a tie game or so, and we absolutely need a basket, and doing that one set. I am not fine with doing it on six possessions in a row like we did against Ohio State and Michigan State at the end. So I agree with you on that point that he gets a little too comfortable and a little too familiar with it.
So answer the damn question. Do we find it?
I think we do. I think we have to.
Okay.
And I think this is Carson's time. I think he's going to be a stud in this. And if you look even at the Big Ten tournament game, he had one of his worst games in weeks. And
no, months.
Months. And
months.
We still only lost by what, 8, 9? You know, yeah. As poorly as we played, if Carson is regular Carson there, we're fine. If Vince is good Vince, we're fine. And that, to me, it's going to be the Edwardses that are going to dictate how far we go.
Okay, real quick. Drew, do you think we'll find the balance?
I think there will be one game in this tournament.
It's a yes or no question.
No, I will say no, I don't. Okay. I think there will be at least one game where Isaac Haas is going to have to beat a team on his own on offense. I think we will, at one point in the tournament, we will go to that. And he's going to have to do it.
So touching on something you kind of asked, Travis, at @Zay_Jack asked, would you hold Vincent out if he's not 100% for Cal State Fullerton?
Yes.
Since you won't need him to win, or at least set a minutes limit, like 15 minutes.
Yes, I would.
Drew?
I've played a lot on bad ankles, and they never get better the more you play on them. They always get worse.
Yeah. You can't do a minute limit. Like, it's either, you either suit him up and he plays, or he doesn't play.
But I'm encouraged that he was able to give the performances he did against Rutgers and Penn State. Those...
No, he wasn't good. He got yanked.
Yeah, he got yanked against Penn State.
I mean,
State.
He got yanked at Michigan.
Well, he was still pretty good against Rutgers and Penn State, and that was his third game in 3 days against Michigan. We're not going to have that scenario right now.
But the question, I guess, I mean, so yeah, what you're saying, you, I would have rather sat him for Rutgers and had Penn State and Michigan him.
Yeah.
So definitely, if he's not 100%, I would sit him against Cal State.
I think he'll be much closer to 100%, though, than he has been.
Ankles are weird. They don't work on a timeline.
Yeah.
They do not work on a timeline.
It just depends on if how much he tore that, you know, that ligament.
They jump from 70 to 85%. And then they slowly fall back, and then randomly they'll jump back up. They do not just work in a line. It scares me. The ankle scares me a lot.
I don't think we should have played. I don't think Vincent should have played another game.
I wouldn't have played him in the tournament even.
There was no benefit. And if the goal is to win the NCAA tournament, if that is the goal of ours, is to go all the way in the tournament, then you need 100% Vince Edwards more than you may need difference between a 2 and a 3 seed.
I might have played him in the Penn State game and then sat him for the Michigan game.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he...
But, I mean, we don't know. We don't know the health better than them.
All I know is we saw him progressively get worse during the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, no rest in a tournament setting is hard.
Right, and he's had a week and a half here to rest, and it's not just, you know, oh, he's sitting back playing video games or anything. No, he's been in the training room getting treatment on it, too.
All right, this one is from Zany Zygote. Which Woo! Top 3 seeded team has a better draw than us? If, say, only Villanova, which is pretty good in my opinion. I'm assuming that means I'd say only Villanova.
I can see that. I kind of like North Carolina's just because I think when they're at their peak, they're really good. And they already spanked Michigan once this year. And I'm just looking over here. You know, Duke, Michigan State's going to be a tough game. You know, you might say Kansas, just because Kansas almost has a cakewalk all the way to the Elite Eight. You know,
I'm not looking at a bracket right now, so I'm not going to be of much help.
All right, I would agree. I would rather have North Carolina's. No, I would rather have Michigan's bracket because I don't want to play Michigan. I would rather play North Carolina than Michigan in the Elite Eight or in the, whatever game, Sweet 16.
Michigan just gives us some really bad match. They may be the worst matchup
in all of college basketball.
Yet we still beat them twice.
Them or Duke. I don't want to play either of them.
But we still beat them twice, and that's, two extremely good wins, and I know we were very fortunate to get those two wins, but we still beat them twice.
All right, another quick question. This is from at Z Young Bowler, B-O-W-L-E-R. Who do you want to see in the round of 32? Butler is a March team, and Arkansas is a super athletic. It's pretty easy for me. It's Butler.
Yeah, Butler.
Butler.
Always choose a team that you beat by double digits.
And I think Dakota will lock what's-his-name down again anyway. I mean, he locked, is it Martin? Is that Butler's best player?
Yeah, Kellen Martin.
Yeah, Dakota locked him down the first Butler game.
I'm bringing up the box score from that game now.
I mean, those two guys have literally been practicing against each other in private all summer.
Yeah, no, I like
Dakota
that.
Knowing his opponent any day of the week.
We put all 5 starters in double figures in that game.
You mean PJ scored 10 points?
PJ was 7 of 8 from the free throw line. So.
Long days ago.
We're getting PJ back.
That seems like
yeah, that's
like
Travis's
not even
hot
team.
Take for everyone.
We're getting PJ back. PJ has delivered his entire career. He's been on a blip here the last couple of weeks. I agree. He has struggled. But this is a guy that has had a knack for hitting the big shot when we need it. He is the guy that has been the cooler at the free throw line when we have needed it. I have 100% faith and confidence in PJ Thompson.
For someone that is scared of everything, it is amazing your faith you have in him.
PJ is my boy. I will ride or die with PJ. We're going to roll down West 86 Street.
No.
Right past Brebuff.
Wow.
All right. Here will be the final question. This should lead us out. This is literally all that matters. It's from Davin_Sharma. How far do you personally think this squad will go?
Go for it, Drew.
Okay, I'll go ahead and put this team in the Final Four. I think we'll make it to the Final Four.
Such a homer.
I like this draw. I like this bracket. I don't think there's any team that we don't match up well with.
I'm going to say that they make at least the Elite Eight, and I can't.
You're not going to say at least. You have to shoot your shot.
I can't make a call on the Final Four.
Pick a goddamn round. We're only here to answer questions.
All right. I
know. He put a lot of pressure with the Final Four. Now you feel like not a fan not to say it.
Yeah, no, I know. Existential crisis right here on the podcast.
I know that they're
being torn apart.
I know they're more than capable, and I desperately want them to make a Final Four just because that would shut the Painter haters the hell up, and I wouldn't have to deal with them as much.
these are a lot of words for round predictions.
But I have been a Purdue fan all my life, and I'm going to say that they'll reach the Elite Eight and they'll lose to Villanova in a tight one.
I'm big on narrative. I think seasons... I don't know if we just create them afterwards or they're molded beforehand. Wichita State beats Villanova. We take on Villanova State in the Elite Eight. We win.
Michigan State
knocks off Duke and then knocks off Kansas. And the year that was supposed to be the weak Big Ten year has three Big Ten teams in the Final Four.
Oh!
Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, and... Virginia's going to run. Virginia's going to be to the Final Four, and Purdue loses to Michigan State in the Final Four.
Oh, that would be very, very
that would sting.
I don't know. Like, in my head, as I'm painting this out, I'm like, Purdue loses to Virginia in the championship.
I just can't think of any way where like, Final Four, like, worst way to lose than to lose to Michigan State in the Final Four. That would be, like, I don't even know if I could enjoy it.
That was literally the Purdue fan in me going, I'm going to go full optimist, and then at the end just be like, I'm going to wreck this car off the road. What would leave me the proper amount of sad finding a Final Four?
If we reached a Final Four, I would be elated. I would be elated. I think that would be a gigantic...
But to lose to like a Big Ten team that we lost by like three on the road to?
We have not made it.
It would be the same bullshit. It's going to be another Miles Bridges like 32-footer.
We have not made it in 38 years.
Like, unconscious for the first, like the last. You won't see Miles Bridges for 12 minutes, and then he'll hit a game
right.
Here's why I hate Miles
Bridges. Would we rather
lose in the Final Four to Michigan State or lose to Villanova in the Elite Eight?
Oh, I guess. God, I hate Michigan State so much.
Here's the thing is. I would be okay with it because it's been 38 years since we have been to a Final Four.
But and that would literally also be like the best chance to get to the national title game ever, and we lose it against Michigan State.
But we're supposed to be a basketball school, and by comparison, we only went 34 years between Rose Bowls. Like, I've had it. I've seen too many teams that should have made a Final Four or could have made a Final Four come up short. I want this, and this is our best chance that we have had in 20 years.
I didn't mean to make this so dark. Why can't Michigan State be on the other side of the bracket? I should just have us lose to Duke in the Final Four. That would feel fine.
Yeah.
No, because that meant we would beat Duke once out of like eight times.
And the thing is, I think we could beat Michigan State if we got a rematch. You know,
that's why it hurt.
Yeah. And watch, as confident as we are, we lose to Cal State Fullerton by 10.
All right, we are done. We are retiring the entire site if we lose to Cal State Fullerton.
Yeah, that's it.
Somebody else is going to have to run it for a few days because I'm going to be blackout drunk for a week and
a half.
We're going to
be called
likely.
Hammer and Kitty Cats and just post pictures of like cats playing. We'll all make more money.
I think I would just
we'll be
have
happier.
To. I think I'd have to get in the car, and drive to Colorado for a week.
Think of how many hours you spend like researching just like one Purdue article. Like you just did the one where you were looking up whatever.
Uh huh.
If you just spent that time looking at cute cat videos, how much happier would your life be?
Yeah, yeah. It would be catastrophic.
Play on cat.
So we should probably start winding this thing down. Let's go for some final thoughts. Drew, what are your final thoughts?
I think everybody just needs... I feel like we're going to win this first weekend, no problem.
It's like the first game.
Boy, you're calling a win over a 15 seed. Boy, you're really kept
calling,
stepping out on
a
limb there.
I'm calling two double-digit wins in our first two games. I think we win both handily.
I made
no
a bet
drama.
With a buddy at a bar. I was working, and I made a bet with him 2 weeks ago. That we would win the first two games each by 15 points.
And see, one of the subtle points of winning both of the first two games is that would give us 30 for the season, and we have never won 30 in a season. And I don't care about that. See, I kind of want that. I like little milestones like that.
As someone that just turned 30 recently, like 3 days ago.
Oh, please. Cry me a river. I'm staring down 40 next year. I got a foot in the grave already.
I'm just saying, 30 is like 29's better.
All right, Casey, what are your final thoughts other than 29 is better?
Honestly, it's an Elite Eight or bust. I literally, as long as we get to the Elite Eight, I will accept no criticism of Painter, the program, Purdue basketball.
I can live with that.
And if we don't, then okay. Because this team, four seniors with an All-American sophomore and the guys coming in the next few years, like, this is the time to leap off.
Right.
This is where we get there.
And especially this.
And we just got to take care of business.
And how it could affect the 2019 recruiting with the ins that Painter is making on the guys that he's going after.
Yeah. This is the march that decides our future.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it's like, I don't think that we're going to get a guy like a Keon Brooks, but I think a good run in March here could lead to getting a guy like Keon Brooks, if that makes sense, because I saw him this weekend and mother of God is he athletic. And
watch when Carson drops like three straight 30-point games.
Oh, and that's the thing. I love Carson. He's a fantastic player. He's still only 6'1". Keon Brooks is 6'7".
I know. I'm just like, that's how it starts. You right. Gotta get sexy before you get hot. Those are words to live by. Close this fucking podcast down.
All right. And I guess I'm gonna offer my final thought here. I'm gonna keep my faith in PJ Thompson. He will have one tournament game where he hits 4 3-pointers. That is my I will profess that. I'm gonna ride or die with him. He's my boy. I have believed in him before he was even offered by Purdue. He will have a game where he hits 4 threes.
Are you doing this to make up to Isaiah for the tweet that was misunderstood?
What? Isaiah is awesome. That was blown completely out of proportion. When I saw Isaiah in the sectional last week and he dropped 7 threes in a span of about 4.5 minutes, it was just unbelievable.
You know, all Juan does is put out Travis Fires on Twitter.
That's why he's not here tonight.
Yeah.
We try to stamp it out beforehand, but sometimes.
It's like one.
We deal with Travis the same way like Trump aides deal with Trump on Twitter.
Oh, God, no. Oh, God.
We need to clarify a few things Travis has recently said.
That's it. We're done.
If that's not the end of the podcast, I don't know what is.
Oh, man. So for Casey, for Drew, for myself, who is apparently our idiot president, this is T-Mel from Hammer and Rails saying, boiler up and let's make a run to San Antonio.
With you, all them, our own Purdue.